Victoria Armour Heilman is a Maryknoll lay missioner who spent 2.5 years in Bangkok providing health care to Hmong refugees escaping from Burma. Her book, Singing to the Dead, is a collection of stories that depict the true value of going on a journey. Armour Heilman said that she wrote this book because the Hmong entrusted her with their stories and gave her the gift of their friendship that changed her life profoundly. In the preface to the book, she says, "A changed heart is the first step in changing the world." Eileen Bott interviewed Victoria Armour Heilman in our studios.
Vicky, can you tell me a little bit about the book?
The book is a memoir, so it's my stories of my experience overseas during my 2.5 years. I was actually stationed at a Buddhist temple. My co-workers were Buddhist monks, and they were smuggling torture victims, war-wounded refugees, and war orphans across the border from Burma into the relative safety of Thailand. Many of them were ill, and they were seeking medical care, and that's where I came in. I, with some other lay missioners and Maryknoll Society members, were helping them to get medical care.
What kind of help did you give them?
I would ask who needed help, and we'd make a list. And the kinds of things we had, there were a lot of very odd things. The first story is the story of a man whose colon falls out into his lap. Not something you see every day. Two men were blinded by landmines in Burma. Several had lost limbs. One, he'd been tortured and his leg had been broken in a way that crippled him because he'd been thrown into prison without any medical help, and we weren't actually able to help him. Sometimes you couldn't. One man was deaf from a landmine explosion. The children, some of them had TB. TB was rampant, so they needed treatment for that. Their major need was nutrition and a way to get to school in Thailand.
Once they came to the temple, did they remain there or did they eventually spread out?
It depended on their status. If it was a monk, they lived at the temple and they stayed there long term, or at least until they could get permanent asylum in a third country. Many of the monks were leaders in Burma before they came to Thailand and really were in danger if they would have been sent back to Burma, and they were officially recognized by the UN as persons of concern. For other refugees, it depended on where they were going. If they had official UN status, some of them were also seeking asylum in a third country and would stay at the temple until they heard from an embassy. One of the problems is it's illegal to be in Thailand as a refugee unless you're actually in the camps. But the governments, the foreign governments, aren't always very helpful in that they have all their offices in Bangkok. So refugees have to come into Bangkok for their interviews.
So the people you mainly worked with were smuggled to you?
Well, they were smuggled across the border.
Right.
And they made their way to Bangkok. And because they were Hmong people, they knew where the Hmong temples were in Thailand, and they would make their way there.
You were dealing not only with medical problems, but fragmented families and orphans. And how do the people themselves deal with that separation?
It's a very difficult thing, particularly for indigenous people to be separated from their people. That's one reason why they would always seek out someone who was another Hmong person to help them, or a Hmong temple, because they felt that their own people understood them better than anyone. I think because separation and tragedy are, they are the daily life of indigenous people from Burma. They were so used to the issues that for us are inconceivable and that we would have to go to a counselor about. That part they just took for granted. Yes, there's going to be family separation. Yes, it wounds the soul in some way. But they just still get up in the morning and do what they have to do.
How did the monks deal with this mass of humanity coming through their temple?
Well, that's one of the wonderful things about Buddhism. Buddhists take what comes, and that's how they're set up. And in traditional cultures, they wouldn't really have orphanages or institutions and not-for-profits until very recently, the way we would in the West. Everything would really be handled through a temple. Even if there weren't a war crisis, even in a place like Thailand where things are peaceful, if a family is really in crisis, the temple is the place they go. The monks were taking in kids, refugees, stray animals from off the street, and that's just how they live. And they go out every morning and they beg for the food that they have.
You said earlier that it was illegal for somebody to be a refugee in Thailand, and that all the offices for these people to reach legal status were in Bangkok. Was there any problems with those who had crossed the border getting into those offices?
There were tremendous problems. To be fair, Thailand has been hit again and again and again. It's this little haven of peace and relative security and relative prosperity that everyone flees to. So every decade they get hit with a new wave. You have Laotians, you have Cambodians, you have Burmese, you've had Vietnamese in the past. So Thailand is trying to protect itself from this onslaught of people who are coming in. The problem is people don't have legal status if they leave the refugee camp. And if a refugee were picked up in Bangkok, where he's not supposed to be, while he's trying to get an interview, he would be put in a detention center and then shipped back to the border. So everyone was suffering. The Thais just didn't have enough to take care of this many people. The international agencies were overworked, and the refugees, as usual, got the short end of the stick.
How did you give medical care to people who were outside the system without bringing too much unwanted interest into the temple?
Well, there was a lot of unwanted interest at the temple. The temple was raided sometimes as often as 5 times a day, and people were taken away to detention centers. And if someone was really sick enough, if they had tubes coming out of them, the police were probably going to leave them alone. But if they were sort of walking around and they were a little better, they really weren't supposed to be there, and police would come in and put them in detention. So what did we do? Occasionally we were able to get a doctor to come into the temple and take a look at people and make judgments. If the person needed follow-up care, a monk and a foreigner would accompany that person to a hospital and try to find a doctor who remembered what it was like to be a healer, a doctor who would say, this person is not documented, and I'm going to take care of them anyway.
If they didn't want to treat the patient, what would happen?
Well, that's where the title of the book comes from, Singing to the Dead. It's not my story. It's the story of another Mary Noller that got passed down to me and became part of my heart. This person had cerebral malaria, and he had diabetes, and I think he had one other thing. However, all three were treatable, but we didn't get him there maybe in time, and we didn't have enough money, and there were worries about the legalities, and everything kind of converged against this poor man. The hospital said, we cannot keep him. It was really at a point where the person, if he didn't get the right care right now, he wasn't going to last through the night. So the Mary Noller asked the monks, could he take the man back to the temple? And basically, when you've run out of everything else, all you have is compassion. And the Mary Noller held the man until he died.
It's horrible how people can get caught up in politics and laws and rules and ignore someone who just needs help.
Yes.
The monks were a different case for you.
The monks and I were co-workers and became friends. As their stories started to unfold, they really became my spiritual community, and the boundaries of religion, ethnicity, culture, language, economics made no difference. What really mattered is we were these human beings faced with things that were too big for us to really handle, and we came to rely on one another.
What were some of their stories?
Most of them were leaders in Burma when they were very young and had made a name for themselves, had risked their lives. The problem is you don't have to do much to risk your life in Burma. If you're an indigenous person who wants to preserve your culture, who wants to teach the children of your people in their own language, you're automatically seen as a subversive. If you also stand up in public and say, we need to find a way to make reforms in this government, you're really in trouble. So many of them talked to other people about democracy, And when the Burmese took over, they fled to the jungle and were in the jungle for about a year until Three Pagoda Pass fell to the Burmese, and then they all came over into Thailand. And then when they got to Thailand, they were seeking asylum in third countries, although for them, that was such a wrench because there are almost no Hmong people in the West. And so the thought of going to a third country meant that they would possibly be separated from their people forever. And as leaders of an indigenous people faced with the twin threats of assimilation or annihilation, they felt such an obligation to their people.
What would happen if they were returned to Burma?
I think it would be pretty grim. One of them, for the crime of having left Burma, his father was tortured and put in prison. And the assumption is that if they were caught, they too might be tortured and put in prison and possibly killed.
The name of the book is Singing to the Dead, written by Mary Nole Missioner Vicki Armour Heilman. Vicki, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. The book is available through most major bookstores and online. Vicki, thank you.